Welcome to a series of netcasts brought to you by Yale University.
I'm Emily Bazelon. I'm an editor at Slate Magazine, and I'm here with Ian Ayers, a professor at Yale Law School, and Barry Nailbuff, a professor at the School of Management at Yale. And we're here to talk about their very interesting new book, which is called Life Cycle Investing. So let me start with a question for you, Ian. You have a very bold idea in this book that, if realized, could in fact substantially change how people in general invest, and particularly young people. So can you explain this bold idea for us, please?
Sure. It starts very simply that we think people should do a better job diversifying across time. Just like it would be a bad idea for you to invest in just a single stock, it would be a bad idea if you invested in the stock market just 1 year of your life. And people understand that, but they come close to that in that they only put a few thousand dollars in the stock market in their 20s, maybe their early 30s. And then they have five or six figures in the stock market when they get to their late 50s or 60s. And that's just not well diversified. It'd be do a better job to spread your exposure to the stock market across time.
And so the problem is that when people have more time to be in the market, they have less money, usually, because they're young. Yeah.
So there's this idea that stocks for the long run. Well, when you have a long run, you tend not to have many stocks. And when you have many stocks, you tend not to have a long run. So the question is, how can you invest more when you're young because you don't have the money? And there's only one way to do that: leverage.
Leverage means borrowing, correct?
That's right. It's very simple. If you have $3,000, you go out and borrow $3,000 and you invest $6,000 in the stock market.
And why is it that you've chosen this 2-to-1 ratio for leverage? Why not 10-to-1 if this is such a great innovation?
Well, 2 aspirin can cure a headache and 10 can give you an ulcer. So just because something's a good idea in moderation doesn't mean you should overdo it. It turns out the cost of leverage goes way up once you go beyond 2-to-1, and the risks do too. So just like we might want to buy a house with 10% down or 20% down, bad idea to do it with nothing down. Same thing, a little leverage gets you more exposure when you're young, but don't overdo it.
So you want young people to borrow more money to invest more in the stock market, but not, say, at the same kind of rate of risk they would take out for a mortgage.
Exactly right. Just to go 2-for-1. We're not saying borrow hundreds of thousands of dollars like you would do on a house. If you have $3,000, borrow $3,000. And it turns out you can do it at a very cheap price now. About 1% interest rate is what it costs to borrow. And you don't have to have any credit history. They don't care about your credit history. They care that you have, the lender has $6,000 in stock as security.
Huh, that's really interesting.
You also don't need to do margin. You can do it via an option account. And so there's no worry about having a margin call.
And so what's the evidence that all of this works, that we won't all be bankrupting ourselves if we pay attention
evidence.
To you?
So we looked at stock data from 1871 through the end of 2009. And it turns out that in year after year, or I should say really life after life, any 45-year span that you take in here, a leveraged approach does a better job than traditional approaches. One of my favorite examples is you could ask yourself, gosh, what would be less risky, to put 75% of your savings in stock and the rest in bonds, or to do something that seems crazy, to start with 200% of your savings in stock when you're young and ramp down to 50% as you get old? And it turns out that those two different strategies, they produce on average the same average retirement nest egg, but the leverage strategy is 20% less risky.
Huh, so if you wanted to come out with the same output, you would have 20% less risk.
And what that means is that the worst cases are much better, and the best cases aren't as good. So you give up some of the highs in order to get rid of some of the lows. The reason, of course, why it's less risky is the data says it, but theory says too. Because you have your money better spread out across years, no one year ends up dominating the results too much.
Right, so you could have a terrible 2007, say, but if you have this 45-year lifespan, you even that out, and everything makes up, in fact, more than makes up for it.
That's exactly right, and you can even think about time diversification at the decade level. You know, this last decade 2007 wasn't a good year, but even this one decade wasn't such a great decade to be invested in the stock market. Better to have three decades of exposure than just really a single decade, which is what most people are doing.
Right, so we really have to invert our whole conception of risk. You take what feels like more risk, but in fact you're spreading it out over a longer period of time, and that makes it less risky.
That's right. You end up actually exposing yourself less to stock in your 50s and 60s, and more when in your 20s and 30s.
So let's be clear. When you're doing the leverage, you actually do have more risk because you have more exposure. But you can take less risk and less exposure in your 50s and 60s. And so on net, the exposure is the same. But the reason why it's reduced risk is because we've allowed you to spread it out better. And most people can't do the spreading because they don't have the money. Leverage allows you to do that.
Now, are there any groups of people for whom this is not a good strategy?
Yes. So first of all, if you have credit card debt, don't do this. Instead, pay off your credit card debt.
And that's because
that's such a liability.
Well, the stocks don't return as much as credit card interest, and so you have a guaranteed return, 18% tax-free. Can't beat that.
So you need some amount of money as kind of a threshold matter before you go up to this 2-to-1
You need
borrowing.
To have something to double, right? 2 times 0 is still zero.
Got it. So one of the responses to your work that I've read about is this criticism that it's too divorced from human psychology. It sounds so appealing and rational when you both describe it, but I think the idea is that people would be so terrified in a bad decade or a bad year that it would completely blow their whole life savings. And I wonder what your responses are to that.
Right. So one response is that we've demonized margin purchases here, but people take borrow money to get an education and to buy houses, and they can somehow overcome their psychological fear. But going more to this point, people might need to be disciplined, and it would be helpful if a new kind of a life cycle fund came into place where you wouldn't have to think about it. You could just park your money in it, and the fund would ramp you down from 200 to 50%.
So we have target date funds today that essentially follow a birthday rule. Your investment in the market is 100 minus your age. So it might start at 80 or 70 and go down to 50 or 40. Instead, we'd like to automate the process, start at 200, and come down to 40 or 50 as well.
I see. And so then one wouldn't necessarily have to think intensely and closely about each year and what the returns were.
The other key point is that it's true that there is greater fluctuation when you're young, but the amounts are still very small. And so you may be leveraged on 10,000 to turn into 20. But let's remember that when you're in your 50s and 60s, it could be 100,000 or 500,000 that's being exposed. And so losing most or losing a lot when you're young is still a small amount of money.
Huh. Now, if everybody took your advice, if we have some magical Ian Ayers, Barry Nailbuff world, would that collective action change the equation?
I think not, because for a couple reasons. First of all, we're suggesting that people take less exposure to stock when they're old and more when they're young. For the economy as a whole, those two effects can balance out. And secondly, it's several aspects of our plan is self-limiting. If for some reason people start borrowing a lot and the interest rate on margin loans go up, then people will not, under our plan, they should borrow less. That as the interest rate goes up for borrowing, as the cost of diversification increases, you diversify less.
People had the same fear, by the way, with mutual funds. They said, if everybody just buys mutual funds, oh my God, nobody will figure out what stock should be priced at what. And so everything, you know, it's chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it isn't. And we'll never have 100% of people doing this. In fact, right now, we'd be very happy if 5%.
Right. It's hardly the immediate process.
Exactly.
Now, you both have teenagers. I wonder if your teenagers are taking all of this good advice to heart.
Well, they don't even have the $3,000 of retirement. But, you know, this is really a message for parents and grandparents, because one of the things you can do is give the gift of diversification. My grandmother gave me a U.S. savings bond, which did not expose me to much stock market risk. It gave a very safe but sub-market return. We've done some analysis that you can extend, not just get diversification across the 45 years of your working life, but if you have the right parents and grandparents, you can start exposing your kids to market risk with regard to some of their bequests
The first 25 years.
For the first 25 years, yeah.
All right, so the new graduation and wedding gift is a life cycle fund.
Well, yeah, I love it.
Actually, just a mutual fund. Just when kids are born, instead of giving them a bond, give them a
And think
fund.
Great, it's the new baby shower gift.
All right, I think that's an excellent note to end on. Life Cycle Investing, it is a new book by Ian Ayers and Barry Nailbuff. I'm Emily Bazelon for Slate Magazine. Thanks very much.